אתה יגידך, וכי יגיד תהילתך, לעשות נחת רוח ליוצאינו. We learned in the Torah an incredible pasuk. In Sefer Bereshit, Parashat Vayeshev, we know that Yaakov Avinu sends Yosef to meet his brothers. Listen to the pasuk. Vayimtzaehu ish vehine toeh basadeh vayishaleu ha'ish le'emor ma tevakesh. Yosef is wandering, looking for his brothers. And suddenly, it looks like he's lost. He's walking around, and he finds a man. And the man asks Yosef an incredible question. Ma tevakesh? What are you seeking? What do you want? What is it that motivates you? The Kotzke Rebbe, Rashi, the Ramban, most of the Mefarshim say that Ish was Malach Gabriel, the angel Gabriel. But the Pasuk goes one step farther and says, Le'emor, he says to him, Ma Tevakesh. Most of the Mefarshim ask the following question: why does he say Le'emor? And what's Malach Gabriel really telling Yosef HaTzadik? Malach Gabriel knew that Yosef is about to be sent to Egypt. He's going to end up in jail. For 22 years, he's not even going to know if his father was involved in the whole thing. Can you imagine? 22 years, every morning Yosef wakes up and he doesn't know if it was just the brothers or maybe the father, Chas v'Chalila, Abba, my father was involved in the whole thing. Says the Malach Gabriel, the only way you will survive your Gehenam, the only way you will survive this incredible ordeal that you're about to go on. He says to him, according to the Kotzke Rebbe, according to the Sifte Chachomim, according to the Ramban, you're about to go and really go to Gehenam. You're going to go for 22 years, an incredible journey. And the only thing in the world that is going to keep you going is if you wake up every single morning and you look at yourself and ask one question. And this is the question you must ask yourself every day of your life. Ma tevakesh? If you're not asking yourself every morning before Modeani, says the Kotzke Rebbe, Ma tevakesh? What am I seeking for? What do I want? What am I here for? What am I supposed to do with my life? If you're not asking these questions, then you are not doing the will of Borei Olam. That in itself is unbelievable. That pasuk changed my life forever. But there's another part of the pasuk. What Yosef answers to the Malach Gabriel is even more incredible. Megbakesh ani es achim. I am searching for my brothers. This was written 3,700 years ago. Do you understand what I'm telling you? 3,700 years ago, today, that pasuk is what wakes me up every morning. Why am I here, Matevakesh? What am I supposed to do with the tools that Borei Olam gave me? What am I supposed to do, Matevakesh? What am I seeking? And the answer says the pasuk, Mevakesh ani es achim. I'm looking for my brothers. You know what you're going to do this summer? You're going to ask every kid, Matevakesh, when you're sitting in that bus, you're going to sit next to that kid and you're going to say, Matevakesh, what do you want from life? If you're not asking that question by the third, fourth week, you're not doing your job. But you're not allowed to ask that question, Mate Bagish. You cannot ask that question from them. If you've never asked that question to yourself. In NCS1, we're so good at telling people what to do. You should go to yeshiva, you should learn Torah, you should do mitzvahs. אני מבקש סליחה, מחילה וכפרה. I ask you to forgive me for what I'm about to say. It's very easy to tell somebody to learn. And it's very easy to tell somebody to do mitzvahs. And it's very easy to tell somebody to daven. But if you're not doing that yourselves, you have no right, chas v'chalila, to ask someone else, Mate Bagish. If you're not asking yourself, Mate Bagish, from yourself, you have 2 months. Every morning you better wake up. And you better wake up during the next 2 months. And you better ask yourselves, before you ask from anybody else, Mate Bagish, what do I want? What do I seek? What does Borei Olam need from me? Ani avdecha ben amatecha. And if you do not understand this concept, Ani avdecha, I am your servant, your slave, Borei Olam. That's all I am. What am I seeking? Mate Bagish. You can only ask that from the kids if you're asking that to yourselves. I'm looking for my brothers. This summer, you're going to be looking for your brothers and sisters. I don't sugarcoat anything. I tell you straight. Zagemara in Masechet Yuma, Chav Bet Amud Aleph, 22:8. Gemara is unbelievable, incredible. People sitting and learning in yeshivas go crazy when they learn this Gemara. When I saw this Gemara for the first time, I ran to 6 Rosh Yeshivas to try to understand Pshat. Why did Shaul HaMelech lose his kingdom? Shaul, the great Shaul HaMelech, the great king, lost his kingdom. You've been told all your life because he did not kill Agag. Because he didn't get rid of Amalek. Says the Gemara in Masechet Yuma, Chavet Amudalek, look it up. Nothing to do with God. That is not why he lost his kingdom. That's what he tells little children, says the Gemara. You know why Shaul HaMelech loses his kingdom? Shein bo dofi, he was perfect. Shein bo dofi. Shaul HaMelech was taller than any other man. It doesn't just mean physically height. He was in such an incredible spiritual level. Shein bo dofi, he was perfect, perfect. He had money, he had looks, he had power. Shein bo dofi, never one day in his life did he suffer. Never one day in his life did he go hungry. Never one day in his life did he have a problem. Says the Gemara in Masechet Yuma, Chav Bet Amud Aleph. Shaul HaMelech loses his kingdom because Shein bo dofi, because he was perfect. And Borei Olam says, you are not the right person to be the leader of the Jewish nation because you have never suffered. Therefore, you cannot feel the suffering of others. You're not the right person. Ein lecha kupa shel sheratzim. You're not carrying in your backpack. Rats. Sheratzim means difficulties, problems, tribulations. You've never suffered in your life. How can you feel for others? Says Borei Olam, it's time to move. Allow someone who's had a difficult life. David HaMelech becomes the Melech. David, until today, until the Mashiach comes, his lineage is going to be the Jewish kings. Because David had a very difficult life. He writes 150 Tehillim because he had 150 tribulations in his life. Every time he had a difficulty, he praised God. His brothers didn't want him to send him away. He never sat at the table of his father. They thought Chas v'Chalila didn't even belong to the family. It came from somebody else. When they actually won the kings, Shmuel HaNavi puts everybody in line. Who's going to be the king from this family? They don't even call him. He's outside. They don't want him. And when they show up, everybody's like, oh, Ribono Shel Olam, this is not the one. You say every single time when you say Hallel, this is the Sela. He was the rock that everybody despised. And yet he became the rock of the Jewish nation. If you have never suffered, how can you tell the kid next to you that you are going to make it? Yes, even though right now is a winter, and even though right now is night, and even though right now is darkness, you should know that every year has four seasons. There are winters, but there are also summers. And you may be going to a winter right now, you tell the kid, but you should know there's always a summer coming. It doesn't matter how much you're in pain. You should know this does not last forever. The night ends up with the morning. That is the message that David HaMelech gave his people. You want to know, when it's all said and done, you've heard amazing speakers, incredible messages. When it's all said and done, if you have no rachamim, if you have no mercy, if you do not remove the suffering of God, that kid is telling you these horrible stories. All the kid wants to do is unload his or her problems. And you sit there and you listen. You listen to their problems. And I know everybody in this room has problems. And I know everybody in this room, every one of us, we go through difficult times. Tell the kid, I want to hear your problems. You should know there is also going to be a summer. Not always is it going to be a winter. If you become a David HaMelech, someone who cares for the nation so much, then you're going to become an incredible leader of the Jewish nation. When it's all said and done, you have to have rachamim. You have to remove their suffering. Adam nibra le'oila le'achrina. The only reason why you were put in this world, it's not the type of Adam HaRishon, you're not Abraham Avinu. The only reason why today you're put in this world, Adam Nibra Lehoyila Leachrina, the only reason why we are here is to remove suffering from the world. And if you don't think about that every day, Matevakish, what does Boy the Olam want from me? To remove suffering. You're getting on that bus. And you're going to remove suffering. And if you do that, if you remove suffering, these young people will follow you to the moon. But you better know where you're going. You cannot ask them, where are you going, if you have no idea where you're going. I'm going to share with you a couple stories that changed my life. This is my 33rd summer doing this. These are the stories that I think about when I get on the bus. And I see the kids for the first time getting on the bus. And every creation in the world is going to get on that bus. It's mamish, that bus is like a teva. It's mamish like Noah's teva. You're sitting there, you mamish Noah. And you're going to see things you have never seen in your life. Shnaim, shnaim, yavol a teva. There's going to be all kinds of creations going to get into your heart. And you're going to say, really? This is what you sent me? Don't repeat this. That guy looks like a giraffe. That one looks like a hippo. This one looks like a zebra. And you think to yourself, Ribono Shel Olam, how am I going to make it happen? Noach made it happen. You can make it happen. This is your teva. This is your teva. And you're going to work so hard, you're not going to sleep. And you're going to be exhausted. But you're going to remove the suffering of every single one of the creations in your table. These are the stories that allow me to continue. Listen to the stories of the Gedolim. The Sadme Rebbe. Nobody knew who the Sadme Rebbe was when he
came after Europe. He came to Brooklyn, Lower East Side. He opened a little shul. The Satmar Rebbe opens a little shul and he starts a Daf Yomi. It's not a Daf Yomi, he started a Gemara, Maserte, they're going to finish the Maserte. And 12 old people who survived the Holocaust show up. They don't even know who the Satmar Rebbe, they just heard there's a new Rav. This is Satmar Rebbe. And he's about to begin teaching them the Maserte. I think it was Brachot. And before he starts and opens Daf Bet Amud Aleph, the Talmud starts always with page 2. Before he begins and he starts teaching them, he asks the guy next to him, where is he from? He says, I'm from Chichenik. And he asks the next guy, where are you from? Lithuania. He goes around the whole day. He didn't teach anything. He's asking them where they're from. The next day, did you lose anybody in the Holocaust? And this goes on. Second day, third day, fifth day. Now he knows everything about every one of them. He knows what city they're from. They know how many people each one of them lost in the Holocaust. He knows everything in Satmar Rebbe. After 6 days, one of the people stands up, an old guy, and says, with all due respect to the Rav, I'm not coming back. I came 6 days, we've never done anything. We never even started Daf Bet Amud Aleph. And this Satmar Rebbe tells this Yid, this Tayyar Yid, this incredible Jew, you're wrong. The past 6 days we learned Daf Aleph. For the past 6 days we learned Daf Aleph of the Masechta. The Masechta starts with page 2 because page 1 is you better get to know your people. How can you expect to teach Torah? How can you expect to change the Neshamas? How can you ask the Matematics if you don't know who they are? You better know who that kid is, where it comes from, what suffering he has. Learn Daf Aleph before they get on the bus. Don't wait until the kid got on the bus. A good director, a good assistant director, amazing advisor. More important is for the advisors. You got to know every kid before they get on the bus. What medicine do you need? Are they diabetic? Chas v'shom, did they lose a mother or father recently? Chas v'chalila, did the parents just got divorced? Learn Daf Aleph before you get to teach Torah. Satmar Rebbe. Rav Moshe Feinstein used to go to upstate New York every summer. There's a very famous picture of Rav Moshe outside on the table. He's learning. There's no jacket, there's no tie, only his tzitzis is outside. It's very hot. Very famous picture of Rav Moshe outside in the summer. He sees one day in the summer, Masechta Tiferes Yerushalayim camp. He sees in the camp, as he's learning, he sees there is a little boy, 8 years old, 7, 8 year old. And he sees the boy is throwing ball by himself. He looks miserable, looks so unhappy. Rav Moshe Feinstein closes the Gemara. Listen carefully. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Gadol Ador, the giant of giants, closes the Gemara, goes over to the kid. He says, what's your name? And he says, my name is Yankele. Rav Moshe Feinstein bends down and he says, my name is Moshe. He says, Yankele, how come you're not playing with other kids? And Yankele says to Rav Moshe Feinstein, nobody wants to play with me. Hagon Rav Moshe Feinstein says, don't say nobody. I want to play with you. And for the next 40 minutes, Rav Moshe Feinstein was throwing ball. With Yankele, the whole camp went outside to see. I was a waiter in that camp that summer. We went outside to see Rav Moshe Feinstein play ball with Yankele. Yankele had no asoga, no idea. Can you imagine Yankele today? 40 years later, Rav Moshe Feinstein can close the Gemara and he can go down to the level of Yankel and play 40 minutes ball with them? I don't care how choshev you are. I don't care how many masechtas you've learned. I don't care how long is your beard. I don't care how long is your skirt. If Rav Moshe Feinstein can do that, you better do that. Rav Aryeh Levin, the tzaddik in our times, is walking around Yerushalayim one winter. It's freezing. And he sees all these kids from Cheder, little kids, 5, 6 years old. They're running out from yeshiva in the middle of lunch. They're running outside. Today we have ice cream carts in Yerushalayim. In that time they had tea, chai, tea. It was hot tea. And the kids would run, in occasional Beit Rabban, would run outside and buy a hot tea. And they would pay 10 lirot for the tea, the hot tea. And the guy would scream, chai, hot tea, tea. And all the little kids would run outside by themselves a tea because they were freezing. And the guy who's selling tea sees there is a little boy over there who's not buying tea. He says, you want to buy the tea? And the kid says, I hate tea. I don't want tea. Rav Aryeh Levin goes over to that boy. He was walking by and saw the whole thing. He tells the boy, come over here. Takes out 10 lirot, Rav Aryeh Levin, and buys a hot tea and he gives it to the kid. The guy who's selling the tea turns around to Rav Aryeh Levin and says, I don't understand. I asked the kid, do you want tea? And he says to me, I hate tea. And Rav Aryeh Levin said to him, that's not what I heard. What I heard is, I am so poor. We have nothing. I don't even have shoes. Look what I have. It's wrapped. Newspaper is wrapped. My feet, I am so poor. We don't have 10 lira. I would love to have a tea, but I cannot afford it. Everybody else is having one. I want one. That's what I saw, said Rav Aryeh Levin. What a kid tells you is one thing. What is really happening is a whole different thing. And you better be listening for what the kid really said. And for what the kid really needs. I want the tea. And I'm so poor. It's a very powerful story I want to end up with. Very powerful. I get very emotional when I tell this story. The story changed my life forever. There was a young man in Argentina in 1979, 1980. Very, very poor young man. His name was Gaston. Lived outside Buenos Aires in a place called Cordoba, Argentina. He had nothing, absolutely nothing. So poor the family. Every day he would open the fridge and there was absolutely nothing to eat. The family starving. Father, mother, siblings. Gaston wakes up one morning. He's around 14, 15 years old. And he says, no more. No more. I'm going to go to this place called America. I'm going to become very wealthy. And I'm going to make sure that my parents and my siblings have money. This guy is so poor, Gaston. Starts walking, makes it to Buenos Aires, continues to walk. Walking all the way. His intention is to walk to America, to the United States. He gets a couple rides, some people help him. He gets in the back of a truck, is able to work here and there. It takes him 18, 19 months to get to the United States. He has nothing, nothing. He works very hard. 2 years ago, Erev Rosh Hashanah, my Rebbe told me this story. 3 years, I'm sorry. 3 years ago, Erev Rosh Hashanah, my Rebbe told me this story. He's friends with Gaston. Gaston today is a multi-millionaire. He has one of the tallest buildings in Manhattan. He owns it. Multi-millionaire. 20-some thousand workers all over the world. He had one dream all his life. One dream. He saw once when he left Cordoba, when he got to Buenos Aires, he saw there was a rich man driving a Jaguar, a convertible Jaguar. All his life he said, when I make it, when I'm rich, when I'm wealthy, when I bring my family to America, when I buy a building in Manhattan, when I have 20,000 workers, I will buy myself the most expensive Jaguar in the world, convertible. He calls Jaguar in England. And he asks for a special type. I don't know about cars much. Special convertible. There's only like 150 of them in the world. Very expensive. Most expensive Jaguar in the world. Convertible. He tells him, I want it. This color is going to be this everything. It's going to be aligned here. Everything. Mal, custom made. He's going to get there 3 months later. They call him up. He has arrived in New Jersey. Goes over to New Jersey. Waits. They pull it out of the container. He gets on his Jaguar. This is the greatest day of his life. This is what he's worked all his life for. He's so excited. He pushes the button. He becomes convertible. Takes off his jacket, puts on the radio, the music. Looks around and says, I made it. I made it. Everything I've ever wanted in my life, I made it. Now, if I start driving really fast and I move it, I will get exactly right now, exactly in 40 minutes, I will get to my building as 20,000 of my workers are leaving my building. They will see me, Gaston, this kid from Argentina, pulling out with the greatest car in the world. And that will be the greatest moment of my life. He's driving towards Manhattan. He's so excited. And the fancy car starts making noise. Picks up the phone. It's his wife. Says, Gaston, where are you? I picked up the car. I'm on my way to Manhattan. Says, no, you're not. You got to go to Brooklyn. You got to pick up the kid. The kid is not feeling well. He's in school. You got to take him to the doctor. Oh, my God. Come on. Send somebody else. We have two mates. Come on. No, no, no. You, the wife says, you, Gaston, you're going to go there to Brooklyn. You're going to pick up your kid. You're going to take him to the hospital. And we all know when the wife says, you do it. You do it because they deserve it. They're amazing. They're incredible and they deserve that you should do it. Gaston puts the phone down, puts in Waze, whatever it was, Google Maps, how to get to the school. He's never even been in this school in Brooklyn. His kid just got there. He's driving through Brooklyn. He's going through these places. He's following these Google Maps. Streets are getting shorter, smaller, smaller. He has no idea where he is. He's never been there. He's so wealthy now, he would never go there. And suddenly, the streets get smaller and smaller. And it looks not such a nice neighborhood. Somewhere in Brooklyn. He has no idea where he is. He's driving his car, listening to his music, touching this leather, beautiful. Everything is incredible. Wow. He is in heaven, the greatest moment of his life. And he sees right in front of him, he's slowing down because the streets are getting smaller and smaller. There's a lot of cars. He sees right in front of him, there's a kid around 8 years old, right in front of him. He sees the kid in front of him. The kid has a brick. And he sees how the kid is pointing the brick. He's about to throw the brick at his car. He's driving. He's petrified. He sees the kid right there. 30 feet, 20 feet. He's getting closer. Starts breaking. He sees the kid, this 8-year-old kid, with a kippah and with this weird stuff over here coming out of his sides. And he sees the kid actually throws the brick. The scariest moment of his life, he sees the brick go straight into the hood of his car. He tries to brake as hard as he can, but the brick actually lands into the hood of his brand new, beautiful Jaguar. He looks, there's a tremendous dent in the hood. Stops the car, gets out of the door, grabs the kid, the 8-year-old kid, takes him, throws him against the car, picks him up, throws him against the wall. By now the kid is bleeding. The kid is crying. He grabs the kid, throws him against the car again. The kid is saying, sir, sir, wait one second. He doesn't care. He lost it. He grabs the kid, throws him again to the floor. The kid is crying. He's bleeding. He's begging. Finally says, sir, sir, please listen. He says, what is it? He says, please follow me. I beg you, just come with me. He follows this kid, really wants to kill the kid, but he follows the kid behind, in the corner, behind, in some kind of alley. He sees there's a lot of cars, and the water was really high in this alley, really high. And he sees behind the car there is a wheelchair that is actually turned sideways, like the chair fell, the wheelchair fell. And there's somebody in the wheelchair, somebody around in his 20s, and the water is about to reach the nose of the 20-year-old person who is in the wheelchair, obviously handicapped, completely sideways, and the water is about to reach to the nose. That means this person
could die very soon. He runs over, lifts up the wheelchair with tremendous strength. He picks up the wheelchair, picking up this 20-year-old handicapped person, saving his life.
The kid says to Gaston, "I'm so sorry. I was trying to stop people. This is my brother. I don't know exactly what happened. I tried to put him in the wheelchair. The wheelchair slipped. He would have drowned. I tried to stop cars. Nobody listened. Finally, I took the brick and I threw the brick at you. I'm so sorry. Please, I will pay whatever it is, not realizing that this is a very expensive car. I'm so sorry." Gaston felt so bad. He was throwing the kid around. The kid is bleeding. The kid is, his clothing is ripped. He never felt so bad in his life. Gaston says, "You don't have to pay anything, just the opposite. What do you need?" He realized that we're very poor people. He says, "This is my business card. Whatever you need in life, please call me." Gaston finally makes it to Manhattan, to his beautiful building, not for lunch, for supper. And yes, 20,000 of his workers are coming out of the building, and yes, they see the car. But instead of saying, "Wow, what an amazing, beautiful car," everybody says, "Gaston, it has a dent. Oh my God. You got a brand new car all the way from England with a huge dent? That's what you got after all these years?" And they're laughing and walking away. Next morning, he wakes up, he calls Jaguar and says, "I want to fix the dent. Come pick up the car." And then he says, no, hangs up the phone. And he starts thinking to himself, everything he has done since he was 14 years old, he left Argentina, was to amass money, power. And he has it all. And now here comes an 8-year-old kid and reminds him what is important in life. He didn't know the words. But he asked himself, "Mate Marquez, what am I seeking for? What do I want? I have it all, the money, the power, everything I ever dreamt, and I'm not happy. Mate Marquez, what am I seeking? What do I want?" He goes over to his Rebbe 2 days before Rosh Hashanah. He's not a religious Jew, but he shows up to the synagogue once in a while, Friday night, and he tells him this story. And the Rebbe says to him, he says, "You may never, ever fix the dent. Every morning, you wake up, you get on that fancy car, you go to your fancy building, to your 20,000 workers, and you see and you look at that dent to remind you, Mate Vakesh, why you're here in this world is not for that. To make sure that you know what you're seeking. What are your goals?" I ask his Rebbe, a friend of mine, a couple months ago, "Does Gaston still have the car?" He said, "Yes." "Does the car still have the dent?" He said, "Yes." I asked him, "Has anything changed? Is he a different person?" He says, "Yes. He used to give his money to museums. Now he gives his money to hospitals in Israel." Please stand up. This summer, you're going to be throwing a lot of bricks at these kids. And you better make a dent in their hood. Your job is to make a dent in their hood, because everything that they talk all their life is about money, power, and other things. And you are going to throw so many bricks, and one of them is going to land right in their beautiful hood, in their heart, in their neshama. And then every single day, they will ask themselves, Mate Marquez, I'll leave you with a beracha. We are about to get to Megillat Ruth. In Megillat Ruth, there is one of the most incredible psukim I've ever read in my life. Boaz goes to the field. He just lost his wife. He just got up from a bangles. 7 days, God gets up. He goes into the field and he says, Hashem
imachem.
And they ask him, Yibarechecha Hashem.
The Balaturin has 27 answers to what Hashem imachem means. 27 answers. It's very hot outside. You should not get sick. I see you removing like a cheek of a bear. Your tzaddikim bless you. They're all blessings, except one answer the Balaturim gives. The Balaturim says one of the answers is not a beracha. It's a statement. He's not blessing them, says the Balaturim. He goes out to the field and he feels mamish kedusha. He feels the presence of Borei Olam. He's never felt that in 40 years in the field.
Baruch atah, babai, baruch atah basai, baruch atah beboecha, baruch atah betzetecha, but he never felt the kedusha in the fields.
And suddenly today he felt kedusha. He turns around and he sees now Rus.
And he realizes everything, all this kedusha is because of this woman.
And he doesn't bless them, he's making a statement. Hashem imachem, God is with you, I feel the kedusha, Hashem imachem. I feel that God is here. I feel the Kedusha.
You're about to go and change lives.
And change your own life.
I'm not giving you a brocha.
I am telling you, Hashem Imachem. I am telling you, God is here. I am telling you, God is with you right now.
Go and make a dent in those nishamas, in those hearts.